From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. We are now in the midst of the waning days of the 2022 congressional midterm elections. Absentee ballots have been or are being cast. For many who cast absentee ballots, the mailbox is their voting booth. Therefore, it is deeply troubling that the Postal Inspection Service picked an auspicious time to broadcast a missive, which was picked up by numerous media outlets around the country, that cast doubt on the security of mailbox collection receptacles. Specifically, the Postal Inspection Service cautioned the mailing public to refrain from using the blue boxes after the daily pickup and during weekends. This is the very same division of the Postal Service that pulled thousands of postal police officers off the streets and limited them to postal-owned and operated facilities, exposing those mail collection boxes to potential criminal activity. As Naps Chat listeners know, Naps strongly supports legislation introduced by Representatives Andrew Garbarino, Bill Pascrell, and Eleanor Holmes Norton to require the Postal Inspection Service to restore postal police authority to protect mail, personnel, and property throughout the mail stream. Now, let's talk about this week's podcast. As I stated at the outset, Election Day is upon us, and I wanted one of the most respected congressional campaign operatives to share insight relating to the fuel that fires political campaigns, financial resources. Naps members contribute generously to the Supervisors Political Action Committee, SPAC, and these funds are used to support congressional allies and candidates for Congress who want to be our allies. During the 2022 campaign cycle, SPAC has contributed approximately $363,000 to worthy Democratic, Republican, and Independent House and Senate candidates. Our guest today is Tina Stoll, president of Campaign Finance Consultants, who, as I stated, is a highly effective campaign fundraiser. Among the senators with whom she has raised funds and worked was the late Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, retiring Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. In addition, she works with Senators A.B. Klobuchar of Minnesota, Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, and Mark Warner of Virginia. During this, the 2022 cycle, she is working with two individuals strongly supported by SPAC, Representative Tim Ryan, who is running for Senate in Ohio, and Ohio Legislative Leader Amelia Sykes, who is running for the House seat being vacated by Representative Ryan. Welcome to Naps Chat, Tina.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tina, you have been fighting on the political battlefield for some time. At times, it can be extremely satisfying, and other times, it can be immensely frustrating. Could you share with us your background and how you were smitten or maybe bitten by the political bug?
Well, Bob, good to be here. I grew up in a very political family, and that is why I think I got into politics. My parents were very involved in the anti-war movement in Vietnam, and they were always, and the civil rights movement, and they used to take me to Washington when they were marching. And I swear, I just think that that just always stuck with me, and I loved it, and I loved listening to their conversations over at the dinner table. And I started volunteering, I think, before I even went to college on political campaigns. So it wasn't a surprise that when I got out of school, I immediately came to Washington and started pursuing a political career.
By vocation, you're a political fundraiser. So I'd like your reaction to a quote long attributed to the late Speaker of the California Assembly, Jesse Unruh, who declared, "Money is the mother's milk of politics."
Absolutely correct. You can't do anything without it in political campaigns. Calling and hiring a fundraiser is one of the first things anyone does when they run for office, because they can't, you know, buy a postage stamp without getting political campaign funds in their campaign accounts. So he was correct. It hasn't changed.
There are 100 members of the Senate and 435 members of the House of Representatives. Besides party affiliation, how is a match made between a political operative like yourself and a candidate or incumbent?
I mean, when you've been doing this as long as I have, you have, you know, reputation, you know people in various campaigns that will call you up and say, would you like to work on this or, you know, on that particular race? And it just, you know, it just happens sort of just by word of mouth. Honestly, it's one of those things that you hear somebody's looking and you throw your hat in the ring, or somebody, you know, calls you up and says, would you be interested in this particular race?
Is there a personal relationship that you need to have with a candidate when they approach you, or an incumbent when they approach you?
It absolutely helps a lot. It's just a much better relationship, and it's much in a working relationship if you have a good personal relationship with the candidate. And for the most part, I feel like I always do have that. It's just a much better, and it's a trust factor. They are hiring you because they want you to be very organized and on top of things, and you want to believe in the candidate. So it works both ways.
I mentioned that this cycle you're working for Senate candidate Tim Ryan and House candidate Amelia Sykes. Could you share us the difference between working on a Senate campaign and a House campaign? Also, after that, working for an incumbent versus working for a candidate?
Sure. Well, I'll take the second one first. It's working for an incumbent is obviously very different because they're already in, they have a record, and you know what you're looking to raise for and about because of their record on specific issues. So that makes it very, very simple. When you're working for a candidate, you have to build it. You know, you have to figure out what it is that they are going to go to Congress to work on, and then try and bring people that care about those issues to the non-incumbent. And you have to build the relationships. Usually an incumbent has a lot more relationships than a challenge or an open seat outside of Washington. And that you have to build, you have to build that with the candidate.
Let's talk about those relationships that you're trying to build. How do you connect a candidate or an incumbent, a newly elected incumbent, with a PAC or organization like mine who is seeking support?
Well, as we know from just recently our relationship, I know you. And when I had a candidate that hadn't had support from you, I picked up the phone. I called you and said, would you like to meet her? Let me fill out the questionnaire so we can give her an opportunity to give her position on the issues that you care about. And then we had a conversation. We brought her to meet you, and the rest is history. She got your support. But it's also what candidates look for is somebody that has relationships like that so that I can help them meet people like you.
You know, it's funny, you know, Tina, I feel like breaking out into a chorus of matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match.
Exactly. But that's what you have to do. That's what they look for when they hire a fundraiser. Everybody can be organized, but what the candidates are looking for is somebody that has relationships so that they can introduce the candidate to people that they don't know. They already have their own Rolodex, and they certainly know how to pick up the phone and call people and ask for money, but they want to have somebody that can actually bring other things to the table.
Now, there were nuts and bolts to a political campaign, which involve mailings, broadcast advertising, and get out the vote activities, which are primarily coordinated by a campaign manager. What's your relationship with the actual campaign activities?
Well, I mean, basically, it's more about the timeline. So they need money to do mailings. And so we have to get the money in the door so that they can do mailings. The same thing with phone bank and internet. It's all about the timeline of the campaign of when they need money to come in. So we tend to be, we're usually told, okay, we need to get all of the yard signs done by X date. We need to have X number of dollars in the bank by that date. And we have to execute on that.
So there's a lot of behind the scenes coordination that may go on between yourself as far as calibrating, raising, having the resources necessary to conduct a modern campaign in 2022 that meets the eye. I mean, there's considerable coordination that needs to go on.
Absolutely. And it has changed. I've been doing this for a very long time. So I remember when fax machines were a technology that everybody had to have and had to use. And we don't do that at all anymore. They don't exist, pretty much. You now do everything online. And it also means that the timing of things changes. Everything can happen a lot quicker.
Now, the expense of running a campaign in 2022 is considerably more than even running one in 2020. What do you attribute the rise in the price of running the price of a congressional seat?
I mean, the price of everything has gone up. And it also, I think the internet has also changed things with campaigns, because now that you have this ability to, for very little money, raise a lot of money from very small donations, it just means that you can just get so much more money in the door and utilize it. It's almost like the democratization of campaigns, because many more people get involved and care about different campaigns around the country.
We are hyper-focused. I mean, the media is hyper-focused on polls. That, you know, we look at, you know, what is one particular, is one candidate ahead or behind, by how much they're ahead or behind. How does that play in your operations?
Well, it makes for up and down moods all the time. I can just tell you that, like, I wish that we didn't see so many polls, but we then take them and use them to our benefit. So if the polls show that it's very close, we're constantly sending out state of the race memos showing various polls, and then we take them and we use them for fundraising. And if, you know, in the beginning of, you know, some campaigns, people think that no one can, that race is not winnable. But each time you get a poll that shows that it is, you tend to use it to reinforce that it is winnable and then raise money off of that.
So as poll numbers, let's say, as a candidate picks up in popularity, is that that's more of an incentive to contribute, as polls show a decline in popularity, that could have a negative impact on fundraising? Or if candidates are really close, there are different sort of ways in which you as a campaign operative use those numbers. And that I, as a person who is charged with helping counsel where money, our resources go, to a large extent, I look at polls.
Right. And it's always better the closer they are. It keeps the interest high. If suddenly everything collapses and your numbers crater, then people are not going to give you money, unfortunately.
There's a tendency for fundraising or fundraisers to operate independently from policy discussion. That means you don't get involved in policy discussions or policy debates. Why do fundraisers stay out of that?
I think we don't necessarily stay out of it. We might offer advice about one position or another and how it would affect fundraising. But I don't think we never say, if you have this position, then you're going to do better with fundraising, so you should take this position. We would just tell, you know, the various ramifications on either side of it. But I've never seen a candidate take a position just for fundraising. I've never worked for anybody that did that.
But
it's not a problem to tell the ramifications of a position one way or the other.
But if you have a candidate, let's say, that has a record, let's say, in the state legislature of promoting, of being very closely aligned, let's say, with postal employees, the postal service, you would highlight that to someone like me.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with that.
And if a particular opponent who is not necessarily supportive of issues that you know that the, let's say, the National Association of Postal Supervisors is supportive of, you might highlight that as a reason to support a particular candidate.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
So you're part of the education process of folks.
Correct.
That we might,
exactly.
As part of this matchmaking process.
Exactly.
Although it's a little bit less of a detective or investigation novel, a detective novel from people running for the Senate, because usually their records are fairly well known. It's the House
races
that we don't really know.
Right.
Final question, Tina. Let's talk about the candidacy of Tim Ryan for the Senate and Amelia Sykes for the House of Representatives. How are they doing?
They're both doing great. They're both doing absolutely terrific. Tim Ryan started this race where everybody said he was a long shot. And, you know, we had a hard time in the very beginning convincing people that he could win. He has taken this to a dead heat. It is a joy to be part of this race. He's doing it all on his own. He's not getting a lot of support from the National Party. You can read multiple articles about that. And he's taken this to a dead heat. And I just keep knocking on wood every day that we win this race. And Amelia Sykes is also just a superstar candidate. And she has a long history in Ohio and comes, you know, from, you know, has a long record there. And I think she's going to win as well. It's been a joy to work for both of them.
I would just mention that our National Executive Vice President, Chuck Mulladore, who holds the political and legislative portfolio as far as our resident offices goes, hails from Youngstown, Ohio, where Tim Ryan is from and Amelia Sykes is going to be representing. So there is a strong affinity that we have to that race and to these two candidates.
Well, I hope I will be working with you on both of them for a very long time.
Once again, our guest this week was Tina Stoll, president of Campaign Finance Consultants. Thanks for joining me today, Tina.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And I want to thank NapsChat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NapsChat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna